For years after my diagnoses of severe depressive disorder and generalized anxiety disorder, I fought my doctor who wanted to prescribe me a medication. I don't know why. Maybe the stigma of being on drugs. I finally did take the doctor's advice, though, and I can tell you, I've never regretted it, never suffered any sort of side effect. But we're still in the dark ages of understanding our brains and the real impact that pharmaceuticals have on the millions of neurons rushing around up there. To help you better make peace with medications, we're starting a new segment here. It's time to Ask the Pharmacist, right now on the Mental Health Podcast. And our pharmacist who will be joining me from time to time to answer your questions about mental health medications is Alexandra Dominguez, who is an advanced practice pharmacist here at Ontario Shores. Hi, Alexandra.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Are you ready to do this?
I guess so.
Okay. So what we're going to do is from time to time, we're gonna pick your brain. People can send in their questions from time to time, and hopefully we'll have answers for them. Because when it comes to mental health meds, it is complicated.
Yeah, there's definitely lots of questions out there, and unfortunately the answers aren't the same for everybody either. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Let's talk first of all about mental health medications in general. Now, I'm on them. What am I on? I'm on something called Sertraline,
yeah.
Sertraline, okay. Now, I'm on 150 milligrams for depression.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, so Sertraline is originally called Zoloft, which a lot of people tend to know the brand names more because they sound more like words.
I didn't know I was on Zoloft.
There you go.
Okay, that's scary.
Yeah, how come?
I don't know. When I hear that word Zoloft, I'm just thinking, uh-oh, addiction. It's just going to make me drowsy, lethargic.
Yeah, which for some people it can, but taken appropriately or kind of understanding how your body adapts to the medication really helps us to be able to take the medication in a way that hopefully is helpful in the end. But yeah, so like sertraline, like you mentioned, 150 milligrams, solid dose, really commonly used in depression, like you mentioned, also like general anxiety disorders, sometimes also seen in OCD. So the thing with these like mental health meds is that they have various avenues in which we can use them. So it's not always this is what you have, this is what you're going to get, because it can really vary a lot of times.
And I'm getting most of my questions about general, you know, general anxieties and general depression disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And this sertraline.
Yep.
People are really wondering why it's necessary to have medication when they're also trying to do therapy and they're trying to do mindfulness.
Yeah, and I think those are things that can be really hard to access in our community, unfortunately. But there's evidence to show that medication plus all these cognitive behavioral therapies and whatnot have the most evidence, the most benefit for patients. It's just hard to kind of access those things. Whereas you go to the doctor's office, you know, I'm feeling kind of low. I've tried these things. I don't really have the enjoyment I used to. Okay, like, let's try this pill. And usually there is a pharmacy within like a kilometer of the doctor's office. So it's just, unfortunately, an easy band-aid to the solution, but it's always good to have like multiple modalities because like ideally, if it's working, you want to kind of stop the medication after like a year or two. But of course, it's after discussion with your doctor, or your pharmacist and things like that.
I've been on this for years.
Oh, really?
Should I be revisiting that?
I think it's a good time to have a conversation about it because usually if you've been like stable on the drug for like 2 years, is they usually recommend like maybe you can lower the dose, kind of pull back, especially if you have those other treatments in line. So if you find exercise is really helpful, or you do mindfulness, or you do CBT with a therapist, like there's so many things besides medications that have like long lasting benefits as well.
All right, this is our first edition of Ask the Pharmacist. You can email in your questions for later episodes and also for our website to the Mental Health Podcast at OntarioShores.ca. And I'm talking with Alexandra Dominguez, who is a advanced practice pharmacist here at Ontario Shores. I don't want to leave that conversation yet about that type of medication, because I want to get into the medications itself and why I'm told is important don't miss a dose and don't try and take yourself off, et cetera, et cetera. What are the caveats? What's important here?
Yeah, so the caveats with stopping the medications yourself or even missing a dose is that some of these medications that are available commercially, if you miss one dose, like by like a few hours even, you can have some pretty nasty side effects.
By a few hours?
Yeah, it's really interesting, and it's something I've heard commonly from patients, so it's not just something that, you know, you read in a paper and you're like, oh, I wonder if this is reality or not, but... yeah, so there are medications. A really common one that comes to mind is brand name is called Effexor, or venlafaxine is the generic name. So people who like miss one day will feel just like physically not well, which is just unfortunately how the medication works. So obviously we want to have our body like consistently exposed to obviously the medication, the drug, so that it continue to have that concentration in our brain to help us kind of either increase the dopamine, increase the serotonin in our brains, which is theorized is one of the reasons that we can develop depression or anxiety.
So it's essential to take this medication, I'm hearing you say, the same time every day.
Yeah, ideally. Of course, like life gets busy in the way, but ideally at the same time.
Morning, evening, lunch?
Depends on the medication.
Yeah.
So yeah, especially like antidepressants can really affect people differently. So I'll have like Susie tell me that taking this med makes me feel really sleepy. So it's ideal that they take it at nighttime. Mm. However, I can have like John Smith tell me actually it makes me feel like I have more energy. So it's ideal to take it in the morning time, but it's hard to predict that when you have someone coming to you, starting the medication for the first time. If I'm going to say, take it in the morning, take it at nighttime, I don't know how it's going to kind of interact with them as a human being.
So it's important that when you get these medications and the pharmacist comes up to you and says, do you have any questions? That maybe you have some questions, that maybe you talk to the pharmacist about time of day to take this, what happens if you miss some, what side effects you should be looking for. That's the place to start.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I have a lot of people also say, or they'll caveat their questions with, I think this is a dumb question, or I think this is a stupid question. And usually it's not, actually. usually it's a question that we can both learn something from. But there's, you know, there's medications that should be taken with food. There's medications that shouldn't. Like you said, like side effects to watch out for. Just things that, unfortunately, doctors don't always have the time to run through because they just kind of have to shuffle through patients just with the way the healthcare system is set up right now. So if you have like 5 minutes with your pharmacist, take it.
And it's easier to get to talk to your pharmacist than your doctor.
Oh yeah, it's just they're behind a counter, so it's easy to track them down. They're usually in grocery stores or in like retail pharmacies. So yeah,
and we a lot of people don't realize how much education a pharmacist has. In fact, and I don't want to insult any doctors out there, they know more about medications than doctors do.
Yeah, yeah, we have 4 years of specific learning, in medications. Like that's it. There's some like diagnosis really high level, whereas like doctors are all like mostly diagnosis, and you get like a sprinkle of medication information, and it's a lot of like on-hands learning for physicians, or a lot of continued learning after, you know, you finish graduating. But I've 4 years.
And therefore, if you have any questions afterwards, instead of having to get on the line with your doctor and wait for them to return or go see them, make an appointment, going into the pharmacy with questions you might have about the impact your medication is having on you would probably be a good place to go.
For sure. Especially if you tend to use the same pharmacy every time, they will have your whole record from as long as you've been there. So they would definitely be really good assets to kind of check in with, or say like, I started this medication and I'm not really feeling too well. Like, what do you think? Like, what should my next steps do?
How do I know if my medication's working? I mean, and I know it sounds like, okay, I'm going to say, sounds like a dumb question, but you know, you may feel lethargic, but you might think that's normal. You may feel sick, but you might think that's normal. Mm-hmm. You may feel nothing at all, and maybe that's normal. How do I know if my medication is working?
Yeah, so antidepressants can be really tricky in that there's no good signal as to them working or not. So usually when we have a patient starting on something new, you just want to contextualize what benefit looks like. So whether that looks like your appetite improving, whether it's you having the motivation to maybe go on walks, which is something you used to enjoy, or even if it's just like you notice that you're able to interact with people on a more meaningful level instead of kind of withdrawing, if that's the kind of person that you are. Just kind of contextualizing instead of it being like, this is a score that you should be like doing weekly or whatnot. And if the number goes up, great. If the number goes down, maybe we revisit. So I think it's making it a more personal for the patient to the things that are bothering them.
Now, I've had a few questions, and I'm going to just assure our audience that we're not using names.
Yeah.
in your questions. So please ask them. It's kept confidential here. I'm getting questions about bipolar. Mm-hmm. And the medications that go along with bipolar. So what do we look at? What kind of medications are we looking at for this?
Classic ones are like lithium, Divalprox or Epival. Those tend to be the really common ones. And then we also have a sprinkling of antipsychotics as well.
What questions should I be asking to get this? Because I have heard so many different stories about bipolar and the reactions to medication that are not good stories. So what do I have to keep in mind when it comes to medication for this?
Yeah, I think that's actually just having the awareness of what we should be following up on. So a lot of times when we start these medications, there should be regular blood work pretty frequently, especially in the beginning. So if we take something like lithium, we should be checking that, you know, the levels in our body are at a therapeutic dose. But also you want to check that, you know, your thyroid is okay, your kidneys are okay. And those are like long-term monitoring, right? So, and it's also possible that there are toxic levels just by like taking an anti-inflammatory, something we might not even think of, and just kind of pop an Advil because we have a headache. So just making sure that, you know, we're aware of what can impact medications, because unfortunately, like, mental health doesn't happen in isolation. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. So it's, there's a lot that can go on, especially in the first month or two when we're starting a medication.
DNA and genes. Mm-hmm. Genetics plays a huge role in any medication, but especially when it comes to mental health. How come we're not doing more to try and look at a person's DNA before we match them with a medication? Should we be doing more of that?
I think it would be very helpful, especially when you get in the more complex cases or people who have longstanding mental health issues, and unfortunately haven't gotten the help that they deserve. The main issue right now is accessibility, both in like where to get it, but also having the funds to purchase it, because it's not currently covered under our public system, and a lot of private insurances also don't cover it as well. So I think the last time I looked it up, on average is around like $400 to $500 to get a genetic test done specifically for mental health drugs.
And that may be a lot of money for quite a few people. It's worth it though, isn't it?
If you're able to, I would hope so. It's just like invaluable information to have, and to be able to share that both with your pharmacist and your doctor, say, you know, I have this piece of paper. It's telling me that I shouldn't be taking drug X, Y, and Z because my body won't metabolize it properly. And then you've also saved money in the long run, whether it's your own or the public's money, with our public plan. But, you know, you're kind of reducing the amount of distress you go through by limiting the trials that you have as well.
The trial and errors.
Absolutely.
What's happening, by the way, with our DNA? I've heard that people can be actually allergic to something that's supposed to be helping them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, like, allergies look different. We know, like, the classic, like, hives, can't breathe, what's portrayed in the media. But it can be as simple as just, like, your body, for whatever reason, is just rejecting the medication, whether it's, you know, severe nausea, like, terrible headaches, things like that, or, you know, blood pressure dropping like crazy. It's hard to predict, unfortunately. But our bodies are so unique that it's hard to capture everything that could happen when we take a medication.
I've had someone here asking about addiction when it comes to mental health medications. Mm-hmm. And we know anytime there is any sort of mood altering drug involved, that there could be a danger of addiction. talk a little bit about that. What should we be watching for and being very careful of?
Yeah, I think unfortunately when it comes to prescription medications, it's a really fine line of using them appropriately, but also recognizing ourselves that, you know, maybe I'm reaching for this tablet a little bit too frequently. It tends to happen with like specific medication classes. So like we'll see with like benzodiazepines. Usually they're used for really short instances, but the calming effect can be quite addicting when you have a person who can be like severely anxious. Just being able to know that if I take this pill within 20 minutes, you know, my nerves will calm, I'll feel a little bit more settled, is it's quite a powerful thought. And it's hard to trap yourself in that mindset, in that mind loop. So just having an open discussion, whether it's your pharmacist, whether it's your doctor, saying, hey, I've been noticing I've been taking the medication more often than I have been before. Is this something I should be worried about? Or are there any withdrawal side effects that I should see? It can be really tricky with medications because obviously they're meant to be there to help you, but that's not always the case, unfortunately.
How often should you reach for these? I call them the fire extinguisher medications. How often should you reach for them? And when do you know you're doing it too much?
Yeah, so I would say if you realize that you're running out of supply faster than what you're given, that's probably a yellow flag at least. Be like, hey, I'm running out of these in 5 days instead of 7 days. Maybe it's been a more stressful week, which fair, happens to us every once in a while. But it's also whether there's kind of those like craving effects. So like, do I feel like my body needs this medication right now? You know, do I feel really antsy without it? Just the way our body physically reacts to wanting to have something, whether it's a prescription drug or whether it's something else. The signs and symptoms are pretty classic above the board.
What should I be watching for with interactions?
Oh, so many things. I think people think normally just like drugs and drugs interact, which is the classic story. But it's also like things we can purchase over the counter. It can be even the foods that we consume or things that we drink. But it can also be in other medical conditions that we have. So there's so many things to consider. So ideally, it's just, again, it starts with a conversation. You know, this is what I'm starting. This is what I usually take. This is what I usually do. And pharmacists are usually pretty good at highlighting like high level interactions. You know, if you're taking this medication, maybe don't take it with food, take it on an empty stomach. Or if you're taking this medication, maybe don't take that Advil all the time or try to stick with Tylenol instead. So
when we get into that too, because we have aspirin, we have Tylenol, we have Advil. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the fact, okay, yes, we're controlling our depression, our anxiety, but at the same time, we still get headaches
for
other
sure,
reasons,
of
right?
Course.
So should I be careful of an ibuprofen?
Generally, no. If you're a relatively healthy individual, it tends to be totally safe. But then you get into those more like complex situations where, or even certain medications. Like I was talking about earlier, if you're an individual who takes lithium, then Advil might not be the best option when you have a headache, but it's kind of looking for more information, I think, and empowering yourself to learn those things, I think is really important as well.
Thus, ask the pharmacist.
Yes.
So you can have your own show of Ask the Pharmacist just by going down to your local pharmacy. But we have Alexandra here who is on our first episode of Ask the Pharmacist. She'll return from time to time. You can also look up her comments on our website, ontarioshores.ca /... Ask the Pharmacist. So that's ontarioshores.ca, Ask the Pharmacist, and she'll have a lot of good advice there for you as well. Earlier, I was talking about the fact that there isn't a lot of new stuff coming out for mental health, and I've been reading that there really isn't a lot going on there. I would think there'd be lots of money to be made with this. Why aren't we coming up with better stuff?
Oof, that's the golden ticket right there. I mean, it's so expensive now just to develop these drugs in general. And unfortunately, because drug companies have to put in such a high cost in the beginning, at the end, whether the product works or not, the cost is going to get shuffled to the patient. And in reality, a lot of the patients that we serve tend not to have the funds available to pay for these like exorbitant costs. So it's kind of just like a downhill spiral. But I don't know if there's the money in it right now. It's right. A lot of money is being invested in like oncology drugs for cancer, or even with Alzheimer's disease, trying to prevent like further progression. But again, those drugs cost like yearly like $30,000, $50,000, and might not be readily accessible anyways in the community. So yeah, I wish I had the answers to why they're not investing more into the population, because clearly it affects, I believe the statistic now is at one point, like 1 in 2 Canadians have some issue with mental health in their lifetime. But yeah, it's, I wish I had a good answer.
No, that's a good answer. I think in itself, is it possible maybe we're at the best we can get right now? I mean, are these really effective medications?
I don't know if we're, I hope we're not at the best that we can get, because there's definitely still a lot of gaps. And I'm sure our patients probably feel the same way as well, where they, you know, there's always that sense of hope of hoping there's something else out there. But I know there's a lot of revisiting back to like some older, more natural products. But that's usually in tandem with therapy and kind of very regulated studies at the moment. But I'd be interested to see what it looks like, of course, in the future when it hopefully becomes a little bit more accessible. But yeah.
I have a question here about mental health medication in conjunction with other medications, especially as you get to be middle-aged and older, where you're into cholesterol medication, you are into diabetes medication, you are into all sorts of different routine kinds of medication. How well do these work with antidepressants?
Yes, with be relatively safe. It's just those like very micro level interactions that happen within our body that we wouldn't really know about. So it's just ensuring that everybody that's involved in our health is kind of informed. So, you know, like I'm taking X, Y, and Z medications. If I start this, is it safe? Then it's really easy to just look it up and just type it in a computer, say, okay, these shouldn't interact. However, like you would still want to monitor for headaches or increased blood sugars, things like that, or higher blood pressure.
Let's talk a little bit more about now some of the more serious mental health illnesses. So we're going to be talking about, well, we talked about bipolar, but we have borderline personality disorder, we have schizophrenia. We now have a huge increase in the number of cognitive declines, such as Alzheimer's and dementia. As we get into the more serious types of medication, there obviously is going to be more serious side effects and serious things that we have to take into consideration. What are things we need to be cautious of in our lifestyles when it comes to these medications? For instance, I've heard quite a few people say that smoking marijuana when you're on bipolar medication, it could send you into a psychotic episode.
Yeah, so it can, honestly, it can be anybody. So even if you have like a family history of some mental health disorders, especially if you're smoking marijuana at like younger ages when your brain is still developing, you're just like multiplying your risk of developing your own mental health illness, which is really unfortunate. But yeah, like if we're talking about bipolar, if we're talking about schizophrenia, it is that trigger that might kind of put you over the edge and induce a psychotic break, or it might even cause like a manic episode for some people.
The irony here is that a lot of people will use marijuana to calm down.
Yeah, so it's whether it's a natural product or it's a pharmaceutical product, it interacts with our bodies so differently. So it's interesting to see across the board for sure.
And it's interesting because a lot of medication has implications within our body. These meds specifically attack, oh, not, I don't want to say attack, but interact with the neurons in our brain.
Yeah, which can be hard to grasp because we don't understand the brain as well as we would hope. But we're trying to at least get to the center of where we think the issue is, which is in the brain. So it's going to play around with our different neurons. It's going to play with the different hormones and receptors we have in our brain. So it's definitely a hard balance between trying to protect your brain, but also kind of fiddling around with a piece of your body that's so interconnected with everything else.
A question here about natural products and alternative products, supplements and that. What do we need to know about those when it comes to working with mental health medications?
Yeah, so there's definitely some big culprits when it comes to interacting with mental health medications. So the big one that comes to mind is called St. John's wort. So,
okay, I've heard that.
Yeah. So historically, it was used for depression, low mood, things like that. But it interacts a lot with the current medications we have available. So that's the big one that we want to stay away from for sure. The other ones, there's not too many interactions, just mostly whether they increase side effects for the individual, or if for some people it just tends to be just another tool in their toolkit to help with their mental health.
Are there some types of food and drink that either help out or hinder a medication's effectiveness?
Definitely. Yeah. So even if we go back to the sertraline example, it's always recommended that it's taken with some food just because our body absorbs the medication better. So there's instances where food itself is helpful. And there's other instances that empty stomach is usually preferred.
So you're not giving me an easy answer here.
No, it's never an easy answer in mental health, unfortunately.
It never is. What do you have to, because what you do here at Ontario Shores is you go from patient to patient to patient and look at their medical histories and look at the prescriptions they're on. What's the number one thing you have to correct most of the time?
Ooh, that's a really good question.
Or top three.
I would say my running joke is that I'm a bad pharmacist because I'm always advocating to take away medications instead of adding them on. So especially because I work in geriatrics, it's a lot of times trying to take away medications that they've been on that they no longer require.
Such as?
Like cholesterol medications at like the age of 85. Like, they've done their work. They've protected you from a stroke for all this time. The benefit isn't really there. Or if you have an individual who's on like baby aspirin to prevent like any cardiac events, but you're an individual who falls a lot, it might not be the best option for you right now when we look at like risks and benefits. But it's just kind of ensuring that our patients are on the lowest but most effective dose for them.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
What do we have to worry about there?
I mean, in general, overconsumption. Yeah. In terms of medication, I would say there are some medications that have clear interactions with alcohol. And it mostly just presents itself as like being overly sedated, which is obviously not something that we want. But being mindful of the influences that alcohol can have on us. Obviously, moderation, very normal. But it's always never too good to have too much of one thing.
All right. Alexander Dominguez, who is an advanced practice pharmacist here at Ontario Shores. This was our first segment for the podcast of Ask the Pharmacist. It's also available on our website, ontarioshores.ca/askthepharmacist. And we encourage you to send your questions in, to ask your questions. We won't use any name. So if you want to send me an email, thementalhealthpodcast@ontarioshores.ca. That's thementalhealthpodcast@ontarioshores.ca. Send in your questions, your concerns, and we'll do our best to get Alexander to answer them. We're also going to put them on that website, the results of that. Because medication, it does have a bad name. I mean, the pharmaceutical companies are sometimes accused of pushing things that we don't need. So there's a lot of times that we question what we're being told about the medicines we're getting. How honest are the pharmaceuticals being with us, do you think, when it comes to mental health medication?
That's a great question. Because a lot of these medications were approved so long ago. I wouldn't even be able to say whether what they reported back then versus now is a picture of what reality is. But that's why it's helpful to have like these really big studies that kind of compare the different drugs available. And usually they tend to use like real world data. So, you know, people just out and about living their lives and kind of following them and seeing how they're doing, that those tend to be the most reflective of what reality is on these medications.
But the mental health medications work.
Yeah, sometimes.
Okay, okay. You were just supposed to say, oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, explain your answer, sometimes.
Yeah.
Be brutally honest.
I mean, sometimes they do work wonders for patients. And it's very heartwarming to see. But there have been many circumstances where no matter what changes we do, unfortunately, there's kind of no regaining, or we're building a new baseline for them, which can be hard not only for the patient, but also for family members and caregivers and their support system. Especially in the older population, we tend to think of individuals with mental health issues as someone, you know, in at a healthier age than, say, when you're 70 or 80. But these individuals do mature. They grow up. You have schizophrenic patients who are 70 and 80. And that looks a lot different than when you have schizophrenia and you're 30 or 40.
All right. We will have you back. Anybody, as I mentioned, can send in their questions. Email us, thementalhealthpodcast@ontarioshores.ca. No names will be used, not to worry. You can also go to our website, ontarioshores.ca/askthepharmacist. Thank you for being here, Alexandra.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, Alexandra Dominguez, who is an advanced practice pharmacist here at Ontario Shores. Until next time, thanks so much for joining us. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the Mental Health Podcast. If you have any thoughts about this episode or suggestions for future episodes, please send me an email at thementalhealthpodcast@ontarioshores.ca. Please don't be alone. Reach out for professional help. For more resources and advice, check out our website, ontarioshores.ca. The Mental Health Podcast is a production of Ontario Shores Center for Mental Health Sciences. I'm Kevin Frankish. Take care of yourself and take care of each other.